everyone. I'm back and I have a really exciting and kind of different interview than we normally do here at the GCE podcast. I spoke with Robin Gerber, who has quite the resume. She's a lauded historian and author who has spoken on dozens of occasions to companies and organizations all over the world about, especially about leadership. And she's really well known for her knowledge on Eleanor Roosevelt, and has written a bestseller book called Leadership, The Eleanor Roosevelt Way, Timeless Strategies from the First Lady of Courage. Now, she has a few other books, and one that's coming out on September 24th this year is Barbie Forever, Her Inspiration, History, and Legacy. I don't care what anyone says, but to love Barbie is to be a geek. I will fight you on this. I will die on this hill. I will fight you and I will die on this hill. Barbie is just, she's iconic, and in that sense of just loving her so much and being able to channel her and watch as she's in body changing times and navigated difficult topics and just been a tool for exploration of the imagination, which is like so many of the other things that I would consider, you know, a geeky love. So Robin's latest book, Barbie Forever, as I mentioned, is out on September 24th this year. It comes out right before International Day of the Girl, which is on October 11th. And Robin is so wonderful, and she has some great stories about the history of Barbie and the impact Barbie and her her creator, Mattel owner Ruth Handler, had. So, without further ado, here is our interview. Enjoy.
What kind of game? Mm-hmm. Don't remember anything else, but I do remember lots of just, not so much profession, but just doing stuff. Like, oh, let's have our Barbies go to the lake today, you know? And we'd pretend that some puddle in the street was a lake, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. All right. So in the introduction of the book, Barbie Forever, which is coming out next week, right?
Yes.
On the 26th, I want to say?
Or 24th, I think.
24th. I'll definitely check back on that.
Okay.
But you, in the introduction of the book, you talk about the Mattel founder, Ruth Handler, and how your initial intrigue was more about her being a trailblazing entrepreneur. What was unique in your findings for this related text? Because you had already written a book about Ruth Handler.
Exactly. That's right. And they did approach me about writing the book.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, honestly, I don't really know that much about Barbie. It just attended to Ruth's building the company.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to really learn about more deeply about the origins of the doll. And one thing I discovered quickly was this wonderful woman who lives in Pennsylvania, Keturah Westenhauser,
mm-hmm.
who had actually written one of the first collector books, and she had some wonderful photos, but she also had interviewed Ruth. And I was reading her book, and she kept having these quotes from Ruth, and I'm like, wait a second, where'd she get these quotes? So I found her. It took a while to track her down. Had to find her through a Joann's fabric store where she worked. It was like following breadcrumbs. Anyway, I said, by any chance, did you interview Ruth Handler? And she said, yes. And it was like 1992. It might have been the first interview anyone had with her that was recorded. I said, well, did you record it? And she said, yes.
Wow.
I said, well, where is the tape recording? And it was, of course, a, like, not reel to reel, but like, you know, a tape,
yeah.
Right? A physical, I don't know if you know what those look like, but,
yeah.
Right? I mean, like a cassette tape.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, gosh, would you mind transcribing those?
Mm-hmm.
And she said, I will if I can find a tape player to play them on.
Oh, my gosh.
It was quite a thing. But anyway, at the end of the day, she did. She transcribed the tapes. So I had original, no one else had ever seen this. These words from Ruth, except the ones that Kit used in her own book. So that was a lot of fun. And then Mattel was going through their, starting to compile their archives.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the interesting things that Ruth Handler did was, because she was getting so much criticism about developing a doll with breasts,
mm-hmm.
and everyone was saying no mother will ever buy that doll for their daughter, she hired a famous, probably the first madman in terms of marketing in the 50s. His name was Ernest Dichter. He was a psychologist who'd studied with Freud and wow. came over from Vienna, you know, during the war. And he came with the idea not of counseling people, but of going to companies and telling them how to sell products from a psychological standpoint.
Wow.
And, yeah, like making lipstick look, put it in a phallic-type container, you know, that kind of thing.
Wow.
And, you know, sell cars with sexy women in them. And so he had an amazing business going, Ernest Dichter. You can look him up. He's very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And he did the first, what we now call focus groups. He called them something else. He had mm-hmm. kind of a castle-like building in New York and he'd bring in groups of people. So Ruth hired him, very forward-thinking of her, and he cost a lot of money. She hired him to look at the issue of what, how should they market Barbie so the mothers wouldn't object. And the other toy they were bringing out was a cap gun mm-hmm. that had very realistic caps that went off like bullets.
Yeah, I saw that in the book, and I was like, yeah, that would not fly for
today. Yeah, imagine today. Well, even then, they were worried about some pushback.
Mm.
So Dichter did a study of those two things, mm-hmm. and I said to Mattel, hey, guys, somewhere in your archive is his report that he got paid a ton of money to do. You got to have it somewhere. And after a lot of pushing and prodding, they found it.
Wow.
So I had the original report, and that's what that section of the book. So the book really has original material that I didn't have for the Barbie and Ruth. Barbie and Ruth is what the biography is called.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, I got to interview the people at the brand, and they really have gone back to Ruth's vision of little girls can be anything. You can be anything. And they've remodeled Barbie, of course. She's mm-hmm. now got four body types, and you can get make her feet go flat. And she's got 28, I think, hair types.
What?
And 18 facial tones, skin tones, body tones.
Yeah, that's definitely a long way from the beginning.
Exactly. So it turned out to be a really interesting project, and also from the standpoint of a product
mm-hmm.
that was so phenomenally successful, why and how did that happen? And then the interviews with the people I found were very fun, too. Do you actually have the book?
I have the digital copy, so I don't have it right in front of me at the moment. But I do have it.
Because you got to look at Jian Yang, who's in Singapore.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he's a collector.
Yeah, well, he's a collector, but he makes Barbie clothes out of toilet paper and napkins.
Oh, my God.
And he just came out with his own book. I saw it on Facebook. I can't even describe it. You have to see the pictures.
Oh, my gosh.
He told me he was just bored in his hotel room one day, and he started playing around with this. And they're insanely amazing.
Hey, you could have done that as a kid instead of your mom making the clothes.
Well, I mean, this guy is so talented. And it's a great example of how the doll serves as, someone said, as a mannequin for
yeah.
people's imagination. Lots of designers, and I interviewed people in the book and, you know, found, read information about famous designers who started dressing Barbies
mm.
because she was such a great little mannequin for them. So
yeah, and a lot of the like the fashion drawings when designers are drawing, the dimensions look a lot similar to, you know, Barbie's kind of unproportional dimensions.
Yes.
So that's even something that kind of bled into each other.
Right, exactly. So she's been a catalyst for a lot of creativity mm-hmm. in the culture. And, you know, also she's been a focal point of, you know, the women's movement to some extent in terms of sexism. And, you know, does she represent something that's harmful to girls or that promotes a sexist culture.
Yeah, so, and, I mean, you mentioned that, you know, she's often kind of butting heads with a lot of the, like, male executives at the company, and it took her a very long time to get the doll in production, but she knew when she had the idea that it was going to be something.
Right. Well, yes, because she saw her daughter. She and Elliot were all about what they called play value.
Mm-hmm.
So a toy had to have play value, meaning that it would engage the child's imagination so they would keep playing with it.
Yeah.
And she saw how her daughter kept playing with paper dolls with her friends and imagining being adults. And she thought, well, these have huge play value, but they fall apart and they're hard to work with and it's hard to attach. I don't know if you played with those, but really hard to attach the dresses to the paper doll. Because the doll is like cardboard and the dresses are paper and they have little tabs in it. Trust me, it's a very frustrating process. And especially for a kid, you know, the tabs tear off and they don't really hold the dress on. And
yeah,
it just
they're not very dexterous yet.
Yeah. And so that's how she had this idea. Well, they would do the same play pattern of pretending they're adults, but wouldn't it be great if they had an actual three-dimensional doll to do it with? And there were only baby dolls. And they did not like to go, they wouldn't create a toy that copied or kind of, they wanted to have an original idea. So it was also an original idea.
Yeah.
But like I said, the design team was all men. The whole industry was men.
Mm-hmm.
The design team led by her husband was all men. And they were very into the rockets and guns. You know, guns were big in the 50s because of the Westerns.
Mm-hmm.
Repeat, they had a very, you know, realistic-looking Winchester rifle. And pistols and holsters and all that stuff and cowboy hats and all that. And rockets, those kinds of things. And musical toys was a big thing. So it wasn't a company that was big into dolls at all.
Mm-hmm.
And then she comes up with this totally out-of-the-box doll idea, which they just think is nuts.
Yeah, especially if they weren't in the market for that. They didn't really know kind of how to splice it.
Right, and they couldn't envision even making it, so it wasn't until she went to Europe. And when she was in Europe, she saw a doll that you would think was a Barbie if you saw it today. And that's what she modeled. She brought it back and said, this is what I'm thinking of.
The Lily doll.
The Lily doll.
Yeah.
Not really knowing, because she bought it at a toy store, that it started life as the embodiment of a cartoon of a woman named Lily who was basically a gold digger, you know, kind of a quasi-prostitute.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so but she had no way of knowing that.
Yeah,
she
yeah.
Speak German, and you know, the doll worked its way into toys. It was a gag sex toy for men, but little girls obviously saw it and liked it, and they figured, okay, we'll sell it in toy stores.
That is crazy.
Yeah. And she saw it hanging in the window of a couple of toy stores, and bought some, brought them back, and said, "Look, here's what I'm talking about. Go to Japan, that's where they were manufacturing, and make, basically copy this toy, you know, this doll, and with some modifications." Now, you know, looking back on it, I suppose she could have said, don't make the breasts quite so large, but I think she didn't. I think she just, you know, as she said to on that Keturah Westenhauser tape, which I'd never seen her say anywhere else, he said, you know, most toys only last 3 years. So I figured it was going to, you know, be around for a few years.
Wow, okay.
Any other toy, and then bam, it isn't. And eventually this German company does sue them, and they settle for like $20,000.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. I was like, that was a little too, like, on the nose of, like, almost a copycat. I was like, they couldn't have gotten out of that unscathed.
No, they did sue them, and, you know, they got paid $20,000, which is pretty ridiculous, but there you go. Anyway, so that was how she came into the world, but with the idea that this toy would have great play value.
Yeah, and it, I like that the separation is between, like, dolls before were always marketed sort of as a way for, like, especially young girls to prepare for motherhood, which is an insane kind of way of, hey, we're going to train our children to already be mothers, and, you know, they're just learning how to walk themselves.
Right.
So right. Even from the very beginning, Barbie was just something on a league of her own.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, we have to think that Ruth herself was not someone who wanted to stay home with her kids.
Yeah.
So, you know, the idea that she would be the one to recognize that not every kid wants to stay home and play with baby dolls.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, she saw her own daughter doing it, so that was, you know, that was, I think, the real...
Yeah.
Inflection point that she always talked about was I saw Barbara, of course, doll's name for her. I saw Barbara doing this with her friends, and they would be engaged for hours, and, you know, I thought, wow, that's really great play value.
Mm-hmm.
If all, you know, why don't we create a toy? I mean, it is striking that the men couldn't see this, you know. I mean, if you think about it, it wasn't such a crazy idea on her part.
Yeah,
They could not see it.
Wow. That, I mean, that also shows how much has changed since, you know, Barbie first came onto the scene, too, and just the way we think about things.
Yes, right.
And it's still interesting because Barbie continuously has, you know, been ahead of times in a lot of ways for other things, such as, like, you know, the STEM initiative, which Mattel is really into, and the, what's the campaign they're currently doing where they have the Olympic medalists and,
right.
It's like the Be Your Own Dream or something.
Yeah, the, I don't know, they keep changing.
Yes.
The inspirational.
The tagline.
Yeah. I haven't kept up with all the taglines, but, yeah, no, it's great, and the people at the brand are just great. They're really innovative, and, you know, they believe in empowerment. You know, they really believe in girls' empowerment.
It definitely feels like Ruth's spirit is kind of, you know, keeping the... it's invigorating the brand.
Yes, and I think, you know, for a while they got away from it.
Yeah.
And now Mattel's come back to it for however long, you know, so the next leader comes in. But right now, you know.
Right now it's at a good place, yeah.
Yeah, I think it is.
So why do you think she's remained still so iconic, even through the bad parts?
Yeah, I think, sorry, let me go away from the noise. I think it is that at the end of the day, she's a product.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as she's selling well, then they're going to keep making her.
Yeah.
So if you think about why has she lasted, well, she's lasted because she sells. And she's mm-hmm. making Mattel, I mean, it's the biggest part of the company, is the Barbie brand.
Yeah, I mean, that's the you know, you hear Mattel, and that's the first thing you think about, too.
Right.
It's synonymous.
Right. So, you know, if the dolls started to be not so popular, I think, you know, then she might be on her way out. But I don't see that happening, because it's all about, you know, if you have a high concept, you know, that idea of high concept,
mm-hmm.
you know, a simple idea that resonates. It's very powerful, and that's mm-hmm. what Barbie is. She's kind of the ultimate high-concept product.
Yeah, you can, she's almost that kind of, like, blank canvas, and like an avatar, where you can impart your own, you know, you impart your own imagination on her. I'm even thinking about a few years ago when my sister graduated from dental hygiene school, we got her a... like dentist Barbie, and it was just so mind blowing that there was something like that to kind of celebrate my sister.
And that's very fun that they do, that they've done that kind of thing. I don't think it quite goes along with the idea of the girls kind of imbuing the doll with whatever they want it to be. Mm-hmm. But it actually doesn't matter. I think what they found is if they buy a Dr. Barbie, they just take all the clothes off and make whatever they want.
I mean, she could be a doctor one day, she could be a, you know, pilot the next. You know, it's exactly. Kind of like testing out the waters for anything.
Right, right. Exactly.
So, this has been really awesome, and I know you do a lot of, you've written on a lot of other very cool subjects that aren't quite like our brand, but I was reading about your Eleanor Roosevelt stuff, and I was, you know, I'm very intrigued on that, too. How did that come into play?
Well, I helped found an academy for leadership for women mm-hmm. and underrepresented people, and there were a lot of books about leadership out. This was the early 2000s, and they were all this kind of genre of, you know, a famous person on leadership. So it was like Lincoln on leadership, Patton on leadership, Reagan on leadership, Gandhi on leadership, Ulysses S. Grant on leadership, the founding fathers on leadership, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, wait a second, aren't there any women? And I only could find one book at that time written by a man called Elizabeth the First, CEO. And I thought, this is insane. We have to go across the ocean and back 500 years. But men have every man and his, you know, brother to choose from. And so it was my first book, and I pitched it, and it sold right away. I said, you know, let's, how about Eleanor Roosevelt? She seems really popular.
Wow.
Still. And I didn't know much about her, but it was, you know, I live in Ojai, California. They would say it was meant to be. I mean, maybe it was. Eleanor and I created quite a wonderful relationship, and I was channeling her. And the book has been selling very steadily for years and years, and I still speak to corporations, schools, you know, government, that kind of thing, telling stories from her life tied to leadership ideas.
So, oh, that's so awesome. I'll definitely have to check that out, because I was mostly focused on the Barbie, but I, you know, glimpsed, you know, to learn about you, and I'm like, oh, that is really awesome.
Well, thanks. I'm actually, you know, be very happy for you to include my website.
Oh, of course.
And I'm going to be doing an online course, actually, for women that's going to use stories from a number of famous women illustrate leadership ideas and talk about, you know, how we can lead more strongly as women and get over the lack of parity that still exists everywhere.
Yeah. And your website is just robingerber.com, correct?
Yes.
Perfect.
Right.
Is there anything else that you want to talk about that you have coming up? I know you have the course, the book is coming out.
No, the course is really my main focus right now. You know, it's the first time I'm doing an online course, but I've just had a lot of interest. You know, people hear me and say, I'd like more. And a friend of mine said, well, you should do an online course. So I'm going to try it and see how that works.
Oh, that sounds really awesome. Congratulations on this.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. Thanks. Have you done any online courses?
I have. I took one with Stan Lee, actually, a couple years ago.
Oh!
So I can't remember if it was through, like, EDX or Coursera, one of those, but it was like, how to, like, write your own comic book. It was really cute.
How cool. And did you write your own comic book?
I penned one out. I haven't done anything with it, but it was just to kind of get my feet in the water, like, to know what goes behind the scenes.
Yeah. Where do you live? Do you live in...
I live in New York.
Oh, New York.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, I wonder, what's the blog again? Geek Chic?
Yes, Geek Chic Elite.
Geek Chic Elite. I wonder if you'd like to talk to... My daughter created the first escape room in a box that you could play at home.
Oh.
That she and her friend, and they're building a whole business around gamifying immersive experiences.
Oh, that sounds really cool.
They're very cool. So it's wildoptimus.com is their mm-hmm. website. And Mattel, actually, ironically enough, bought their game. They did a very successful Kickstarter, and then Mattel found it and bought it. They're on their second one now, if you like escape rooms. But I think they might really fit your demographic.
Oh, yeah. That does sound like, you know, something we'd very much be interested in. That's really awesome.
They just gamified Electric Forest, which is a music festival in Michigan.
Oh, shoot. Yeah.
So, yeah, they're, like I say, they're building a really interesting business that didn't exist.
See, Mattel's on the cutting edge again.
Yeah. So, exactly. So, I think you can, let me know if you need to reach them, but I think you can reach them through their website, too.
Oh, perfect. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
All right.
Let me know if you need anything else.
I shall. Thanks again.
Okay, take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.